Welcome to This Human Life with the Philosophical Coach. I'm thrilled to have you tuning in. I'm your host, Sam Kilgathis, aka the Philosophical Coach, philosopher, Hume expert, and high performance coach. This podcast at its core is about navigating the complexities of being human, whilst providing you the opportunity to go beyond any conception of who you think you are really. Inside of the freedom that comes from not being attached to figuring out your true purpose or who you are is an opening for creating a life free from constraint. If that intrigues or excites you, then you're definitely in the right place. The ideas are drawn from neuroscience, philosophy, my coaching practice, working with elite leaders, and experience. You can expect candor, humor, vulnerability, and ideas which are unfamiliar to you, and some you may just plain disagree with. You'll also get the opportunity to hear from inspiring coaches and leaders. Now let's get ready to question what we know. So welcome back to This Human Life. Today, it's my pleasure to have my friend Clemarie Motta on to speak with us. And Clemarie is a transformational coach. She moves people from good to great, and she embraces wellness in all of its dimensions. Clemarie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Sam. It's an honor. I've been looking forward to this very much.
Brilliant. So have I. I'll tell you, I've been looking forward to it for a long time. So I just want the audience to get a sense of who you are and just, you know, what you do.
Okay. Well, how I like to say how coaching found me was a few years ago. I experienced a forced job change. I was let go. And I took a look at my life and realized it wasn't where I really truly wanted to be. So I embarked on my own personal weight loss journey. And I lost non-surgically 250 pounds. And I say non-surgically because people tend to discount weight loss surgery. I say, however you can find who you are and be your healthiest, go for it. But I'll just say I've lost 250 pounds non-surgically, and now I've kept it off for nearly a year, which is a first for me. And as the weight fell off my body, you know, as I lost the weight, what I found was a different Clemarie, someone who was truly a performer, who liked to be out in the world instead of cowering in the corner. So I found, actually 3 months into my weight loss journey, my coach on the journey said, you need to coach people. You can move people. You're inspiring. And I said, at that point, I was 300 and something pounds. And I said, you know, who's going to look at me and have me coach them? And I guess I've lived it. And so I did start coaching, and I started with a narrow focus on my coaching. And I love, like you said, moving people from good to great. I found that the tools that I use to help me lose weight really are, can be employed, can be used in life. And that's really when I made the change to become a transformational coach and move just beyond weight loss. Because when it comes down to it, I think, you know, I like to say I didn't look at 250 pounds, because if I had looked at having to lose 250 pounds, it would have, you know, it's like boiling the ocean, right? Don't boil the ocean. I would have stopped. I would have been paralyzed with fear and insecurity. And so I took it in 25 pound increments. And so that really helped looking at it. And that's something that, you know, I celebrated the milestones along the way, each 25 pounds. Now, the Italian American in me, you know, we grew up celebrating with food. Obviously, I was not celebrating with food. But, you know, when I hit 100 pounds, I went and bought a piece of jewelry. And when I hit my goal weight, I went out and curated a piece of jewelry and built something that was for me, created by me. And that was a celebration. And I wear it to remind me of what I've accomplished. I also learned how to be flexible and not so perfect. I am when I take any of those personality tests, I am a people pleaser. And that came from a lifetime of trying desperately to get people to like me, because feeling that they couldn't like me just for me, because A, I didn't like myself, and B, because I was in a frame, I carried a physical weight on me. How could anyone like a heavy person? That's how I thought. So I was a people pleaser. And part of that became perfectionist. If I did everything perfect, then there would be no reason why somebody wouldn't like me. And what I had to embrace as part of my journey, my transformation, was the realization that nearly nothing goes as planned. And if I set these expectations up in my head, I'm just setting myself up for failure. So the ability to be agile and flexible and to reassess at every step along my journey proved really important. And it's something that I speak with when I speak to friends, family, and especially my clients, to give myself grace. We're also, and I wasn't going to mention this, but I have always said that overweight people, maybe specifically overweight women, but in general, I think I can say overweight people who are not happy with an aspect of their lives. It doesn't have to be weight. It can be anything. They can be the nicest people in the world to everyone else, but beat themselves up and treat themselves. If you had heard the negative self-talk, it was like I had, I'm going to age myself, a Walkman going in my head all the time. And that cassette tape just never shut off. And so giving myself the grace to allow flexibility gave me the ability to forgive myself for missteps along the way, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. Like, I think there's so much there, which is, it resonates no matter who you are as a human being, because you're really touching on the human experience is what I heard, right? You know, the dealing with a sense of wanting to belong is such a fundamental identity, you know, aspect of constructing one's identity, is this feeling of not belonging at some point in life. And, you know, it takes so many different forms. And, you know, it's clear from the way you described it that the form was in the sense of people not liking you. Like, if you didn't, so you need to be perfect in order to be liked. And then that creates this tendency and this default way of operating, which is, okay, I need to be a perfectionist. If I'm not a perfectionist, then no one will like me, which is
absolutely. And then it becomes, if I have to be a perfectionist, then I have to know everything about everything, you know, and then it's the world according to Claire Marie, and that's not a world I want to live in. And, you know, so what I realized is I don't need to know everything. And this I use in all aspects of my work. I surround myself with experts. You know, I have my internal board of directors, that, you know, the Claire Marie board of directors, and I have people that I trust. Sam, you're one of those people. You know, I have people that I trust. I have people that I go to when I need a no. Can we curse on this?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. A no bullshit answer. You know, like I know that there's someone I'm going to go to that's not a yes person when I really want the truth. I know when I need a kick in the pants. I actually texted someone the other day and I said, I need a kick in the pants. And I also know when I need love, when I need someone who's going to be a little softer with my feelings. Like, I can't take tough love today, so I'm going to go to this person. So I surround myself with experts. In my coaching journey, I have nurses, I have nutritionists, I have exercise instructors that help me become, you know, I'm certified as a obesity prevention educator, but I don't know everything. And coming to that realization, while it was humbling, it was freeing. And I think that's, wow, I just gave myself chills, Sam. That is the word that really, I literally gave myself goosebumps. That's the word, I'm going to cry, that is what I want to offer people. And it's because it's what I experienced myself. the freedom from the mental and physical prison that I put myself in. I built it block by block, brick by brick. And the freedom that I've, by the grace of God, received through my journey. Oh God, it's a gift I want to give the world. It's why I do what I do. It's why I say coaching found me, because I get so excited and just I want people to feel that they have that they're empowered, that they can have the same freedoms in their lives. I did not know I was going to go there, Sam. You're good.
This is why we're doing this. This is why I have Glenn Marie on, because like this woman inspires me constantly, and the way that she shows up, and you know, we just got to cross paths a couple of years ago, and every time that we've got to cross paths, you know, and had a chance to have another conversation, it's just, it lights me up and inspires me and gets me more centered around what I'm up to, because I see you and me, and you know, vice versa. It's not a, you know, there's all that, you know, it's just beautiful, Glenn Marie. And you know, there was a couple of things that I want to touch on, because I thought it encapsulates a philosophy which I have seen make a massive difference in my life and other people's lives as well. And it's what you said was the freedom about not knowing. You know, it's so easy to, I think two ideas. One is we try to be right a lot in life, and often that's like something is sought after, and we're told this is what you should do, is you need to get the right answer, right? You study so you can get the right answer. And so you try and acquire more knowledge so you can get the right answer. And then the way we approach life is from a place of knowledge and a place of being right. And what that blocks is any opportunity to see something new. You don't get to discover anything inside of knowing, and you don't get to discover anything inside of being right. So if you're right about like, oh, people won't like me if I'm this way, then that's just what you get to keep for as long or until you discover something new.
And think about how small your world can be if you're only going to do what you know and what you think, where you can be right. That lane is very narrow. So it's like you're walking through life with blinders on. You know, I want to be wrong. And this is, you know, brand new Claire Marie for sure. But I want to be wrong. Because I want to go out there and fail. I want to try something new and experiencing something new is another sense of freedom. And being wrong is okay. It's okay. I mean, it's the Thomas Edison, or it was, you know, like, how many failures do you get before you built the light bulb, right? So you have to try and be wrong. You can't always assume that you're going to be right, you know, because that forces you to be on a path that is just, I don't know, boring.
There's definitely that. There's definitely the boringness, but there's the righteousness, and the righteousness makes you someone who doesn't listen.
Oh, right? That's so true.
Right. You are right. So if someone says, you know, something which doesn't fit with your worldview, then automatically your default, you know, sense of self will be like, no, that's not possible. No, you're wrong. You know, and it will be defensive if it's something which jars you. If, you know, that's just how we automatically respond. The nature of thought is defensive, and most of it is negative.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. And it really, it does. It closes you off from the world. It can be arrogant, and I don't want to show up in life that way. So wow. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. The ability to be open to other ideas and other avenues and other possibilities that you may not even have thought of now is just amazing.
I'll give you an example of this where I had to really sit with it. And I was working as a consultant, and I was getting some coaching where the person was basically saying to me, Sam, you have an answer for everything. And I said, no, I don't. And you know, the way it was coming to me was like, I don't don't have an answer for everything. Like, I don't know much about, you know, these aspects of physics. I don't know this anything about chemistry, or I don't know anything, all the things I don't know about. But I didn't look at it from his perspective. I didn't look at, like, what is it actually that he's seeing in the way I'm interacting with him, which is bringing that interpretation of me forth. And so until I started to question that, I was just stuck in, no, I don't. But of course, all I was doing was automatically giving him an answer to prove the very point which he was, you know, illustrating. But in the questioning of what I was taking for granted as, no, he's wrong, then I saw something new. Then I was in the space of discovery, and then I was in the, not trying to resist that, you know, analysis, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that aspect of discovery, you're a pioneer. You can explore your own world. And until you realize that you are not the queen or king of your own universe, then, you know, that's a great way of looking at it. I like that, Sam. Yeah. You taught me something.
Well, no, look, I'm pleased about that, but I love what you just said there, because it hones in on another kind of idea, which is so paramount to the work that I've got to do over the last year. And that's around this idea of being the center of the universe. And the way, you know, you just said, like, you're not the king or queen of your own universe, but yet the way we go through life is exactly that way. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at it, you know, I've got a microphone in front of me, and it's my microphone. The microphone's in relationship to me is how it occurs. You know, the phone's over here, the water's over there. They're all my stuff. So, but the thing is, they're just there. You know, they're not actually in relationship to me in reality, but the reality that we've created is as if they're actually in relationship to me. So I'm seeing it from my eyes, even though it's over there. So the idea is, like, I'm here, and that's there. And so I'm seeing this where I'm not. And yet that's the way we go through life. We go through life from this point of view of, no, everything's in relationship to me. So when you go into a room and you're trying to get into a conversation, you're looking for your opportunity, like, why won't they hurry up? Why won't they give you a chance to speak? Because it's all about you. Mm-hmm. When you're, you know, waiting on someone to get something done for you, it's all about you. It's everything is coming from that. And the more we can center ourselves and question, like, oh, what's going on over where they are? Mm-hmm. The more we can shift out of being the center, the more you actually can shift into the service orientation that, you know, coaching brings forth.
Absolutely. And what struck me about what you just said, I went to a place, I read a book, I can't remember the name now. I think it's Positive Intelligence, fantastic book. And in one of the chapters, they said, take a picture of yourself when you were younger and have it, you know, close by, because that's before the world wore you down, essentially. But I flashed as you were speaking about the world according to you and everything in very much, because my picture is me at like 3.5 years old. And at 3.5 years old, all you know is that the world is there for you. You know, you and so as you were speaking, I was like, wow, so much of what that meant to me was my maturity for so long was stunted. You know, I was a toddler because the world was according to me, everything was in relation to me. And you're right. One of the things that we do as coaches is we ask how we can best serve others. I am here to serve. I am the Sherpa. You know, my clients, they do the hard work. I get the thank you texts and everything. And I'm like, no, this was you. This is you doing this. I'm here to offer my experience, to ask the right questions, to help you have insights. But it's not me, it's you. And so that aspect of service versus, you know, I'm going to say toddlerdom, yeah. You know, is so true, because we don't, you know, a lot of people, I read something years and years ago about how we sometimes our emotional maturity stops at a point where we have been woefully disappointed or something happened to us emotionally. And so I think that in a lot of ways, the emotional growth that's necessary to get to that point, to see the world from someone else's point of view, for a lot of us is stunted. It doesn't happen, and see, I was going to say as quickly as it should, but everyone is on their own timetable. So, you know, there is no should.
Well, of course there's no should, but some people never get off their own timetable.
And that is so true. That
they
is
remain
true.
In the world of the child forevermore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me, that's sad, but they also, it's kind of like an undiscovered life in from that mm-hmm. point of view. It's like they don't know that this is what they're, how they're living. So they just gone through life in this default way. And there's never any opportunity to discover anything new because they haven't ever opened their mind to seeing something new.
Undiscovered living. That one gave me goosebumps too. I'm writing that one down, Sam. I like that a lot.
Well, in philosophy, you've got, is it better to live an unexamined life or better to live an examined life? And philosophers going back and forth about whether or not one is a better way than the other. And there are, you know, there are instances where it's kind of like your ignorance could be freeing because you don't actually know what's in the way. And I've certainly talked to people before where they say, like, I don't want to really examine my life because I don't really want to see what there might be on the other side. So I get mm-hmm. it. Like, it takes courage to throw yourself into an environment where you will be coached by someone because you are listening to hear something new and potentially hear something you don't like, right?
Like, well, having to examine that part of yourself. And as I said, the prison that we talked about, the prison that I built, that's taking that accountability, taking that responsibility, it can be painful. You know, that's where I love what you said about courage, because fear can mean, right, fuck everything and run, or face everything and rise, you know, and I really do believe the courage to be coached and is the courage to take positive steps and take control of your own destiny in a way, you know, to examine the parts that are hidden. We're only as sick as our secrets, right? With just making things, you know, bringing everything out to the light of day is when you can heal and move forward that light, you know? So I really do believe that. That's wonderful.
So one thing I want to, we talked about earlier, which I want to, as in you and I talked about earlier, I want to touch on was this idea of messiness. I'm really fascinated about that. So can you share a little bit about what messiness means to you?
Sure. One of my favorite sayings is, how I do anything is how I do everything. And so I truly believe that when there's messiness in my life, I need to, in one area of my life, I need to examine it, because there's usually, you know, several layers underneath that is the genesis or the impetus to why I'm being messy. I'll use the example of my food. So coming from a place of having lost weight multiple times, over my life, never being able to keep it off. And I'm getting emotional.
That's
got a little emotional there. I was not expecting that.
You can just be with the experience, you know, it's perfect. Like, it's,
wow.
You're just getting, you're getting present to how far you've come. Right.
You're right. I have come far. And what I'm experiencing now, almost a year into my weight loss journey, is the fear, now that I am authentically, vulnerably exposing myself to the world, exposing my journey to the world. Exposing is probably not the right word, but it sounds like I'm doing something dirty. But you know, you know, allowing the world to see Claire Marie, scars and all, is scary. And I shared with you, and I'll share here, because I have to get over the shame of this. Losing 250 pounds after a lifetime of being a heavy person has required me to have some skin removal surgery. And so I'm going to embark upon that in August, the first of three major surgeries. And I am ashamed. I thought I had gotten rid of all the shame, but this surgery has brought it up. I'm scared of the physical surgery, the physical healing process. What I'm more afraid of, or more apprehensive about is the finality of it. And this surgeon I'm going to, I mean, he only does skin removal surgeries for people who have lost significant amounts of weight, because he does feel that it puts the bow on your whole journey. So your outside can match your inside. And that is, it's scary to me, putting that bow, because the world will then see the clamoree that I want them to see, that I feel like that I've earned. Mm. And at the same time, there's no going back. So this surgery, it means that I can't gain the weight back. And that is, I don't want to gain the weight back, but the surgery is one step further to making that a reality. And so what's happening is that fear has caused me to be messy. Like, I didn't make my bed this morning. I had too many string beans last night. And they actually were string beans.
Is there such a thing as too many string beans?
When they're made with pancetta and they're made with pancetta and white wine. So yeah, so it's different. I didn't sit down with a pint of Haagen-Dazs or a half gallon of, cookies and cream and finish it myself. But I know my food is messy. And when I realize my food is messy, I need to look beyond it. And it's fear. It's fear of being called a fraud. I had someone reach out to me on social media and basically said, I'm just waiting for you to gain that weight back. And I had someone else reach out to me on Instagram. DMs can be so cutting. And I was like, who do you think you are? And on, and I won't go into the vitriol because I don't want to, I don't want to revisit it, but those types of things used to make my life very messy, and my food would be messy, and it would impact my relationships with people around me. So this aspect of messiness, but right now, what it means for me is how can I, when I first see that messiness start to creep in, do some self-reflection, check in with my board of directors and say, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. I need some help. I need some help getting to the root cause so I can address it. And I stopped there for a second with getting some help, because one thing that the old clamoree did was never ask for help. That was a sign of weakness. Right. And I had to appear strong and knowledgeable. And like we said, the world according to Claire Marie, right? I was the queen of my universe. Queens don't need to ask for help. At least in my mind, I didn't. So I now ask for help early and often. I recognize that I am not alone on this journey. I don't need to be alone on this journey. And so the messiness is, wow, I just came to this realization. It's a gift. Wow, Sam, you let me just talk stream of consciousness and look at this. The messiness is a gift because it gets me out of my head. It gets me into my gut. It gets me to, not be isolating. It's the trigger that forces me or allows me, gives me the freedom to reach out for help. So my messiness is a gift. You're good.
Yeah, look, that's beautiful. And one thing I wonder is if what's behind the feeling of constraint around messiness, I wonder if it kind of plays back to the old clamoree's perfectionism. Because if you've created this persona where you have to be perfect, that would include, I imagine, how you eat. And so, you have this idea of clean eating, and what clean eating looks like to you might be very different to what clean eating looks like to me. I'd say I eat clean, but I've also just been on holiday and been drinking every night and indulging in lots of food. But the food was clean. The wine was delicious. and I don't have any sense of guilt around it, but I don't know what else, but I also know I have no sense of fear of putting on a ton of weight. In fact, I was trying to fill out having lost weight from not exercising as much as I'd wanted. So it's a very different situation to be in, but I just could hear that kind of idea of like, oh, is there this wanting to hold on to the perfectionism?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I see it. I see it in my girls. I see it in, so funny how you can see it in other people a lot of times before you can actually notice it in yourself. But yes, absolutely. It's why in the past, restrictive food plans, diets didn't work for me, because once I deviated from what I deemed perfection, I just threw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So, you know, so part of that, what we talked about, the freedom, the flexibility, the reassessing your goals at multiple, you know, milestones, toll gates along the way of your longer journey, that really is all about giving yourself grace, forgiving yourself, and embracing the messiness. Life is messy. Life should be messy. Think about a child playing in the mud, you know, wearing rain boots and stamping on, you know, in puddles and jumping over frogs. And, you know, life is meant to be messy. But think about the joy. You just laughed, right? I mean, the joy that image fills you with. So by trying to keep too clean of a perfect life, we're not allowing ourselves, I'm not allowing myself to enjoy the messiness, you know, and I'm not going to go so far as to say embrace it, because like I said, it does for me in certain areas of my life, messiness means something that I need to examine, that I know I need to examine, but in general, life is meant to be messy, and allowing that messiness to teach us and to expose new things that we want or that we didn't know about, didn't realize existed, it can be wonderful.
Yeah, I can see that for myself, you know, right now. It's like one of the things I, you know, I see like my own kind of the business is like, all right, so the philosophical coach exists for people to live a life free of constraint. And then I sometimes question, like, oh, can I really have that as what this is about? Because there are obviously things which come up in life. There are obviously things which look like constraints. So does that mean that I need to live a life where there is never a constraint which comes up to be able to say authentically, like, this is what this is about? Mm-hmm. And I have to look and go, well, am I saying that I'm stopped by the constraint? Or am I just saying there's something which comes up and then I will be relentless in my pursuit of getting it out of the way, you know? And I sit in it like, okay, that's what it is, right? It's like, things will always happen. You know, bad shit happens all the time. It's how you deal with it. Can you deal powerfully with that circumstance? And if you can deal powerfully with that circumstance, you don't have to be in the space of, oh God, now I'm constrained again, because that's just what's going on internally, right? Unless I'm actually in prison or, you know, shackled in some way, it's all an internal constraint which I'm creating for myself. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to live a perfect life. I'm not pretending to live a perfect life. That's not even something which could exist even if you wanted.
Right.
And that's not what I want people to want in life either.
It's all about that mindset, that all or nothing mindset. You know, life is messy. One of my favorite sayings is life happens, you know, and how we deal with what's presented to us, as long as we can look back at night when we're laying our head upon our pillow, as long as we can look back and say that we served someone, we helped someone, we were kind, and we met the day's challenges with grace and excitement and joy. I think that's a good life. That's a life to be proud of. That's a life I would be proud of. And so I do believe that changing our mindset and seeing the opportunities instead of the challenges, you know, that the recognizing challenges exist, but seeing how those challenges can be, you turn them on their side, perhaps they can give you an opportunity, even if it's just to test your strength about how hard, you know, how much you can handle. There, I do believe, barring any, you know, thing horribly major, that most of the challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis are, you know, there's a saying, the obstacle is the way, right? So, you know, how we meet those challenges tells a lot about our character, how we react to people who have challenges of their own says a lot about who we are inside and who we want to be. So I think that's important, that all or nothing mindset, that all or nothing mentality doesn't help. It goes back again to that perfectionism. It's
not attractive either, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've often said, like if you were to meet someone, like just the very conception of someone who was perfect is, one, it's a subjective perception. So it's not based on anyone else's reality, or it could be based, you know, on someone else's reality, but it's not based on necessarily the other person's reality. Like everyone else is looking at this from, oh, look, their life must be perfect or something like this. But that's the rose-tinted glasses which you look at, especially on social media. You can get the perception.
Oh, I was just going to say that, absolutely. All this,
so therefore, their life looks like that. You've got no idea what people's life looks like, and you have no idea what's going on internally with people moment by moment. You know, we know absolutely. For a fact, like, bulk of billionaires in the world are miserable. Why? Because they're probably constantly chasing more. They can't just be with what is. So they just need to, you know, there's a podcast which is called Addicted to Success. It's like, well, it's an addiction. It's literally become an addiction. I need to be more and more successful in order to be all right. So it doesn't sound like a way of living that is joyous and just allows you to the freedom to be and the freedom to act. And the freedom to be and the freedom to act is just being able to be responsible for your experience of the circumstances, not to be like, oh, I can't believe this is the case. Like, how do I deal with this? What's going to go on? Like, yeah, there's shit which goes wrong all the time in terms of our perception of what wrong is. But the more I can sit with it, the more I can be, okay, this is just what is. And I can look at it for right now. Like, there's things which happen, things like, oh, I want this to happen faster, and it's not. And I can get frustrated, and I can see that for myself. I'm getting frustrated. Okay. But does being frustrated help anything right now? Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. Okay, so can you let that go? Yeah, okay, I can let that go. I can let the frustration go, you know? And that's the simplicity of just being like, okay, this is what is. This is what, you can't change the circumstance, but you can be responsible for your experience of the circumstance. There's an opportunity to be like, all right, I can either do something else or I can let it be. Mm-hmm.
So I have to, I wasn't counting, but I heard the word be is a very important word for me. And I honed in on what you were saying before, because I spent a lifetime becoming, right? So becoming, yes, it's an action. And I do believe in general that we are always becoming, because life is not stagnant. You can't step in the same stream twice.
Yeah.
However, because I say I don't use the word but however, the word be is be present, be accountable, be that be, that means to me owning who I am at that moment. I actually bought a bracelet with a bee hanging from it to be a reminder to me to be present in my life and to just be, and not always have to be chasing the next dollar, you know, or the next job or the next whatever it is. And so that moment, that word means to me the acceptance of where I am in this world at that moment. And that being has always been very difficult for me to embrace. So the fact that you said that word be, I think it involves sitting with feelings, sitting with who we are. So it's an active being, But it's difficult. It's difficult for me, and a lot of my coaching centers around embracing stillness and embracing the silence. You know, not jumping into to a silent pause, a pregnant pause, becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable. You know, and so that word being is a very powerful word, and it means so much to me how one word can trigger my mind goes a million miles a minute, because it just impacts so much, because I wasn't happy with who I was. I wasn't happy being. It's funny because my dreams used to be very soap opera-y, if I can say that. So, you know, I was always the star, of course. And most of the time I was singing and the center of the universe. But it was always something that was not based in reality at all. You know, so it was that or it was nightmares. And so when I can have a dreamless night, or when I can dream of something in that's more like reality, or it's more like, I told you we're going to Philadelphia next weekend. Like, I had a dream the other night about, oh, I wonder where there's good places to walk. Cause if you know me, I walk every day. And I'm like, oh, I bet I could walk along the river. I could walk here. I could walk there. And so that was such a welcome dream for me, because it wasn't taking myself out of who I am now. I wasn't creating this world where it was easier for Claire Marie to live, because Claire Marie doesn't like where she's living now in this space, in this moment of being. So seeing that change, and it kind of goes back to how we do anything is how we do everything. So how I dream in a lot of ways is how I, is how comfortable or how much I embrace where I am at this moment. I am comfortable being Claire Marie.
That's a really powerful place to stand. Mm-hmm. Right? The more you can create that acceptance around reality as it is, not everything else, you know, it creates ease. And, you know, that is not something to take for granted, because most people, I would say, don't experience that. The experience of ease is often feeling unattainable. No matter how much people achieve, no matter how much they get, creating ease and peace of mind is seemingly much more difficult.
Absolutely. You know, there's, you know, the way I coach really looks at where we are, and then that ideal life, and then what are the obstacles in the middle that are preventing us from reaching what we feel, at least at that moment, would be the ideal way to show up in the world. And being most of the time, there's something in our current world that serves some aspect of us, right? And that's why we're holding on to it, and that's why we're embracing it. So not being able to, lost my train of thought. Not, you know, one of the things that I work on is appreciating with my clients, appreciating where we are now also doesn't mean that we have to stop striving for what we want to achieve, right? You can do both. It's not, you don't have to be, have multiple personalities to embrace and appreciate and acknowledge what you've accomplished and where you are now. And at the same time, not be 100% satisfied and work on finding ways to modify how you look at the world. Because most of the time, it's really all in our mindset, and modify how we look in the world so we can find actions that will help us get closer to the ideal world. It's kind of what you were saying before. There's ways that we can attain our goals. I don't think you use those words, but it's what I was hearing you say, that you know, to embrace that, to embrace the path, the journey to get to that place of freedom, to get to that place where you can serve others, to get to that place where it's not the world according to you. It's an open world. It's a wide open world. And sometimes that ideal world that we want, that we think we want, is not what we want at all. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I think, you know, coaching helps, and having, being introspective, being able to really look at the drivers behind the actions that you take and the inactions that you take, right? Not making a choice is a choice, right? And so I think that all plays into how do we start to, I know it's a trite saying, but live our best lives.
Absolutely. Now, I want to give you an opportunity now to look, and you've already mentioned a challenge which you have coming up, and I want to see whether or not that's still what's present to you. So what's one challenge that you're dealing with right now that you would love to, you know, have it either lifted from you or be in a place where it's no longer such a constraint?
I think it, a large part of what I feel holds me back is from achieving my zone of genius, or my, you know, what I want to do, is that there's still a part of Claire Marie that cares too much about what other people think. And that goes into the shame about saying, yes, I have excess skin. It's just a fact at this point, right? I mean, thought I got rid of this shame too. Can't weigh 400 pounds and then lose 250 pounds and not have your vessel need some help.
Yeah.
And so there's really, truly, if I look at it objectively, there's nothing shameful in that. The, however, saying those words, 400 pounds, and saying I need skin removal surgery is so intensely personal and vulnerable to me. And in my head, I'm saying, wow, if I put out there that I'm having the surgery, people are going to start looking for like the flabby skin, and people are going to like, they're going to think I'm disgusting, and people are this and people are that. And people, so I guess the surgery is an act. It's an event. And what it's bringing up in me is the fact that I still care a lot more than I feel I want to about what other people think. So that's something that I think holds me back. In when I was solely concentrating on weight loss coaching, my nutritional coaching, my physical, you know, health, wellness coaching, I spent a lot of time thinking about how to approach people. And my coach said to me, you are walking through the desert with water, and people desperately need your water. They desperately want to feel well. They want, you know, and so there's nothing shameful. There's nothing wrong with you saying, I see you're in pain. I see you're struggling. Can I help you? Can I serve you? Or how can I serve you? And yet I had and in some cases still have issues doing that, because I don't want to hurt people's feelings. And I don't want people to think, who is this woman for, you know, thinking, oh, so she lost all this weight and now she's so perfect and she wants to tell me that I can't have my pizza and beer, you know? So I know if somebody came to me at 400 pounds and said, well, people did come to me and say, I, you know, my mom, God bless my mom. My mom has the patience of what is that, Job or whatever they say, because how many times did I literally stop talking to her because she bought me, you know, a membership and a weight loss plan. She bought me, you know, she gave me for my birthday 1 year, 6 visits to a nutritionist. And instead of recognizing the water that she was giving me, while I wandered the desert, I felt shamed and I felt attacked. And I would never want to make someone feel that way. So I do worry. I'm going all over the place, Sam. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but a lot of it is.
Let me help you. Let's try and hone in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So there are a few things which are coming up.
Yes, please.
One of the things which I can hear is this perfectionism, which is just in the background, kind of constantly as this default, right? So, and you're living these conversations from your head. You're not living the conversations out there. You're not living them in actual reality. You're just living them from your head. This is the first thing, right? There's a lot of noise, which you're allowing to direct how you act and then how you feel.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So the first thing I would be doing is I'd be looking and I'd be like, is all of this me? Right? And the way we can start to do this is, look, are any of those thoughts ones that you've had before?
Yes.
When was the first time you had those thoughts? How old were you?
Probably a child, probably a young teenager.
Yeah. So you literally have this pattern from at least teenager, perhaps to being a child, which isn't you, it's just your brain providing what is familiar to it, which is the role of the brain. It functions towards an end. What end? An end which is familiar to it. It will fight against anything which is not familiar. So it's going to continue to keep giving you opportunities to listen to that patterning so it doesn't have to do any extra work, right? And you just get to choose, right? In coaching, people talk about your thoughts create your reality. I say that's bullshit. What creates your reality is the significance that you give your thoughts. Mm. We all have crazy thoughts. No one in the world, I don't care how transformational a coach you are, everyone has crazy thoughts, morbid thoughts, whatever that you want to call them.
Yeah.
You're never going to stop them. But if you can
turn down the volume,
if you can be with them, not try to resist them, just, oh, there, it's there, you know, they will start to no longer have significance for you because you are separating you from the thought.
Okay, I can see that. I there are times where I allow the voices in my head to drown out the feelings and the you know, I believe that we live our best lives when we have an alignment between our head, our heart, and our gut. And so there are times when the head starts to try and lead the way, and that inner critic, that judge, is hard to not listen to. So I would agree with that.
Yeah, of course. Like, everyone has that experience. Everyone Absolutely. Is dealing with what's going on with you internally, you know, and that's just what's going on with you internally, but it's not you. If you can distinguish yourself from what's going on with your emotional state, what's going on with your mental state, what's going on with your physical state, and what's going on with your thoughts and your memories, you get to create so much more power in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agreed.
Right. And it doesn't mean that we're always going to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because we're not trying to be perfect.
No, we're not.
We're just trying to be powerful and free in our lives in the way that we can be at ease with this is what's so. This is what is actually the reality in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then if something about that reality, which we're not happy with, well, then we can declare something, we take responsibility for it, so that we're the cause of actually shifting it. You know, being cause in the matter of whatever it is, which is holding you back.
Absolutely. And what has worked for me to get me out of that cycle that I can get drawn into, that I think we all can get drawn into, is checking and have somebody reflect back to me. Because it's like the funhouse mirror, right? My view of myself, my view of my reality can become distorted. And so being able to find that person, that no BS person, you know, that can reflect back, well, this is my experience of you right now. And can be very helpful. So yes. And that's why not isolating is important. So I can have that kind of feedback.
Amazing. And look, I want to go a little step further, because you've also spoken about this concern about being caught a fraud based on one or two people who have come and said something negative based on whatever they're dealing with, based on whatever they are projecting onto you. And then you're very kindly taking on what they've said and saying, oh yeah, they're right. Oh yeah, maybe this is my worst fear. I really don't want to be caught a fraud. And they're seeing that I'm actually a fraud. And because you're taking on the belief, you get to then experience what they are giving to you.
I don't know, that one doesn't resonate with me as much. Can you maybe, I don't know, let me think about that. You know, it's funny because social media is so prevalent, especially for the past, right, 18 months. You know, because that's really the way we were connecting with the world, since we couldn't mm-hmm. connect in person. So what I believe was worse for me than those, you're right, two people who called me out on social media, is the assignment I was doing in my head of what people were thinking but not writing.
Right.
So to me, those two people were actually so out of left field, and they were just two in a sea of supportive people, which I'm very blessed to have found in my journey and my sharing authentically about my coaching and what I do and who I am. So I while they were momentarily hurtful and painful,
yeah.
By and large, what is more debilitating to me is the assignment of the assumptions I make about what people are thinking and not writing. You know, let me give you an example. When I talked about not having freedom, when I was physically larger and mm. unhealthy, I would look for the closest parking space. I would get to a restaurant and mentally calculate the space between chairs. And you know, is that booth going to be one that I can fit in or not? And so the going to my daughters or dancers, going to their recitals, and literally coming home and having to put salve on my thighs because of how broken they were from trying to fit into the seats. And I shared actually on Facebook in the beginning of June that how I knew that I had changed was that I walked in. We were in a new theater for dance recitals this year. I just walked in and sat down. Mm. And it wasn't until the person next to me was struggling and moving, I was like, holy shit. Oh, excuse me. like I just sat down and didn't even think of it. So that to me was me embracing the new person I am. We talked about, you know, chiseling the stone and away of everything that's not clamory to get to the clamory. So what I want is that ease that I found in that one instance I want to spread that, you know, I want to spread that across other areas of my life. I want that, that innate knowledge that becomes second nature and doesn't, I don't have to think about it. I don't have to go through the mental gyrations of, should I post this? Is this going to rub somebody the wrong way? Or, you know, what if I say this, is this person going, you know, oh, if I post this, this person from high school is going to think this. And no, you know, people don't think about me all the time. Only I do. And yes. So that ease and that freedom that I felt when I realized I just walked in and sat in a chair and didn't calculate the weight and how it was going to feel and whether it was going to hurt and is it going to buckle underneath me. I want that freedom to be in other areas of my life. It's spreading. It's just, you know, it's not as fast, you know, we're part of the instant gratification world, right? So it's not as prevalent as I would like it to be, as I wish it would be, as I honestly thought it would be at this point. Right. And that goes back to my perfectionism. You know, like I thought by now, hey, I've been coaching for 2 years. I've been at this goal weight for almost a year. Shouldn't I be cured of all of my foibles? You know, like, you know, the way the weight fell off, shouldn't my insecurities have fallen off and my perfectionist, you know, tendencies fallen off? No, they didn't. And that pisses me off sometimes, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you know, you're human. And you're always going to be human. And it's the more we can be all right with the fact that we're always going to have foibles, the easier it is to have that ease, which you're wanting in other areas. Because it sounds like there's a resistance to what is in those areas. And whereas, you know, you are much more in touch with reality and when it comes to the weight loss part. So it's just like the ease just came from you constantly taking action, which was consistent with the end which you were looking to create. Whereas, you know, I don't know what it looks exactly looks like, and maybe you want to share, but it sounds like in those other areas, you have an expectation about what it should be like, and it's not meeting that expectation, and then that's creating a frustration.
Yes. And I still take things to heart a lot more than I wish I did. For example, my mom, who I love more than anything, she always said, you're lucky, not that she wanted me to be heavy, but you're lucky you're heavy because your wrinkles don't show. And so as I've lost weight, now she said, your face is too thin. Look, you can see all your wrinkles. And I know she didn't mean, you know, she didn't mean anything bad. She wasn't trying to hurt me, but it took a long time for me to look in the mirror and embrace the woman I've become from here to here. And obviously between my ears, right? Because that's the most important thing, you know, the clamory that is my inner being. But just, you know, like I the laugh lines, like I'm looking at myself and I'm like, okay, I could call them laugh lines. I don't have to call them wrinkles, you know, and so it's that caring what people think, because then I actually went to a makeup artist and I said, you know what? Somebody told me my cheekbones are too prevalent now. Can you show me how to like plump my, she's like, plump? You want to minimize your cheekbones, Claire? I know you're a man, Sam, but for a woman, cheekbones, that's what you want. And yet I physically called, and it was in COVID, and I had this woman with a mask come to my house and try and show me how to minimize my cheekbones. That is how that is how fixated I got on one person's comment. So it was, I don't want to necessarily say perfectionism, because I don't think I had a perfect face before either, but it was that looking at an aspect of my life and not like thinking like, okay, well, why couldn't I just lose my 250 pounds from my ass and leave the face, you know, like it's embracing that messiness. It's that just life is good, but life is not always where I thought I would be at this age, at this, you know, stage in my career, as at this, you know, there's a lot of shoulds in the world. And I don't want to have a should party. I want to embrace the be. I want to be and be happy with who Clay Marie is and who I'm continually finding out I am. I said coaching found me. Like this is something new in my life, in my future. I didn't think if you had come to me, if you knew me 3 years ago, Sam, you would not recognize the person that I am today. And I was perfectly satisfied being in the, you know, in the background, and I was myopic. I was laser focused on just getting through the day and accepting that was going to be my lot in life, as opposed to pioneering and what did you call it? Embracing the undiscovered living and becoming. And so it's while I'm embracing it, it's also, there are definitely times where my old tendencies come to the fore and I get pissed at myself instead of allowing myself the grace that I tell all of my clients, allow yourself grace. Life happens. You know, nobody's perfect, and yet applying that to myself sometimes is difficult. I was not expecting to be as authentically raw today, Sam.
And that's beautiful, right? Because the thing is, Claire Marie, when you're able to be so authentic, how do you think it's going to resonate with the people in your world, the people you're coaching, who are dealing with feelings of shame, dealing with concerns about being attacked, dealing with concerns that they're going to be called a fraud, all of the things which you have had to deal with, whether still there at some point or, you know, have dealt with. They know in you that they have someone who is going to be able to allow them to accept themselves however they are in this moment and any other moment. And that's the kind of coach which is going to resonate with them. They don't want the coach who's perfect. That's the coach which is doing something where they're going to hold on to the shame. They're going to feel more like a fraud because they can't be like that, right? Mm-hmm. They want the human being, the humanity, the empathy, and sometimes the kick up the ass when they're ready for that.
Right.
But they want you. Not some perception of who you are, not, you know, some view of where you should be. They just want the authentic you. And when you continue to show up in that authentic way, more and more people will be inspired by that.
That's how I live my life now. I don't know how to not be authentic and raw. I just don't. I feel like it's almost addicting. If me exposing my scars can help one person not give up and realize that they can move from good to great, that they can experience joy and gratitude in their own lives, then that makes me feel like I've lived a good day.
That's beautiful, right? Like that is a simple but beautiful message to have, because that's what's going to really transform more and more what the world actually looks like, because it's the dis-ease which people experience in life which leads to everything which doesn't seem to work. Mm-hmm. So I want to end just by, first of all, I want to acknowledge you for the human being that you are. For the human being you always were, but didn't get to see who you were, the greatness that you have, the beauty, the love, the ability to inspire, and the consistency that you have over the last 2 years and just taking uncomfortable action in getting yourself out of the way, any conception of who you thought you were out of the way, so that you can make this monumental difference for not people just on a wellness journey, but people who want to take their lives from good to great. So I really acknowledge you for that.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. And I want to say, thank you. Thank you. I took a training course where they said, when somebody gives you an acknowledgement that really hits you in the gut and your heart, all you have to do is say thank you. So thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. And now the way I want to end this is I really want you to tell people how they can find you, where they should go if they want to get in touch with you.
Oh, well, that is a really good question that I did not know you were going to answer. Ask me. I just have, right now I don't have a website, so I would love to help as many people in the world as I possibly could. But if they go to ClaireMarieMata@gmail.com, reach out to me. I will definitely reach out to them and would love to connect with as many people as I could.
And you're also on Facebook if they...
I am on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. So that's as well.
And what is the Instagram and Facebook handle?
ClaireMarieMata, I believe, is Instagram. I don't use it all the time. So let me just double check.
And if you do need to, if you do want to reach out to ClaireMarie and you're having trouble finding her for any reason, just get in contact with me and I will happily get you in contact with her.
Yes. And so ClaireMarieMata is Instagram and then ClaireMarie Pierantoni-Mata is Facebook.
Beautiful.
So that's wonderful.
This has been, such a beautiful, heartwarming conversation, but I think it's going to be massively valuable to so many people. So many people are going to be able to see themselves in not just what you've dealt with, but who you've become. They're going to be inspired by what they've got to hear, but also recognize that it's okay to have the messiness. It's okay to still have these perfectionist tendencies, even though you know that there's no perfect anyway.
Mm-hmm. I hope that is my fervent hope and wish for that for today, that the conversation between you and I touched even one person and help them realize that of what they could create in their lives. So that's wonderful. And I so appreciate you for giving me the stage here today and giving me the opportunity to share my story and also connect with you, because you are an amazing human being yourself in your own right. And I'm so blessed to know you.
Thank you. I got your acknowledgement. And, I can't wait to keep to seeing the journey that you continue to go on and the lives you're going to continue to touch.
I can't wait either.
Whether you're a relative veteran of this podcast or a new listener, thank you for taking the time to listen. If you've got value from this podcast, then I invite you to go to lovethepodcast.com/thishumanlife and share your biggest takeaway so that more people can discover and be impacted by this work. Because I'm on a mission to help people live a life free from constraint, to go beyond any limit they see for themselves. If that resonates with you, you can reach out to me directly at thephilosophicalcoach.com.